It gets angry at people like Molly. It gets angry at Julie Kelly, who's the only person really tirelessly chronicling the dramatic injustice that's being dealt out to the January 6th protesters. Or Heather McDonald, who chronicles the complete collapse of law and order in our cities. It gets mad at those people. Why are you rocking the boat? Now, conservatives, I've been complaining about this for a long time. I'll reiterate the complaint. A lot of conservatives, I think, believe that the most noble thing they can do is to police their own side. The left never does this, ever. The left works overtime to ensure that its people are excused, exonerated, set free, bailed out on charges of murder, rioting, arson, you name it. Meanwhile, the conservatives eagerly seek the death penalty for their own side over parking tickets. Not that I'm saying we should be like the left. I think we should be a little. We ought to be more loyal to our friends and our people. I am not saying that we should excuse arson and rioting, but that's a moot point anyway, since our side doesn't riot and burn down cities. So we don't really have to worry about that dilemma confronting us anytime soon. For conservatives, the most heroic act of the 20th century was not D-Day or the moon landing. It was Buckley purging the Birchers. And they're always on the lookout for more purges. Whole careers and institutions are now made of this. Think of the Bulwark and the Dispatch and the billions of dollars, or however much it is, behind them, of Bill and Steve and Jonah and David and Kevin. All of them now character assassins out to destroy the lives of anyone even a click to their right. One thing I've also noticed is that conservatives really get mad when you point out that the people who treat you like enemies are, in fact, your enemies. Finally, the conservatives find a backbone and some righteous indignation. To refer to someone libeling you, trying to cancel you, calling for your, quote, extirpation and assassination, I use those words advisedly since they both happened to me, if you describe that person as an enemy, how dare you? You're being uncivil. Civility in politics above all else. You're raising the temperature. Right? What explains this? I think it's kind of perverse, so let's see if we can find an explanation. Let me give you another quote. This one from a movie. I'll do my best Robert De Niro impersonation here. Probably won't be that good, but it'll give you the flavor of the quote. He says, "I'm sorry, but he knew about our getting hit on 3 big machines in a row, and he did nothing about it. That means either he was in on it, or forgive me for saying this, he was too dumb to see what was going on. Either way, I cannot have a man like that working here." The operative phrase here being in on it. I.e., part of the operation to ensure that the right is forever feckless and useless, and to destroy anyone on the right who scores real points against our anti-conservative, anti-liberal, anti-American, and, brace yourselves, I'm just going to say it, increasingly anti-white regime. Actually, this is what gets the conservatives most upset. Noticing that the regime is all of the above, quoting the left's own radical words back makes conservatives apoplectic. Not with rage, exactly. I don't think they have enough thumos for genuine rage. But with a kind of terror. Oh no, he said it. Now they'll really get mad. Let's not rock the boat. Peace above all. To appease this God we have just angered, it's time for another sacrifice on the altar of concord. Let's see which rightist we can disembowel next. Either way, either they're in on it, or they're motivated by a dedication to principles so perverse as to be self-negating. It is plausible, and we may say that the explanation fits the observable facts, that the conservatives are the way they are because they have completely internalized the narrative of the left. They believe America is irredeemably evil and racist. They believe that they themselves are horrible people, burdened with a kind of original sin, but not the one described in the Bible, but rather one cooked up by 20th century academic leftists and intellectuals. They believe, to quote Susan Sontag, her most famous quote, maybe her only memorable quote, that the white race is the cancer of human history. And so they believe they deserve to lose, and perhaps even to deserve to die. So let me return to our stated topic here. To the extent that the modern conservative takes his, quote, principles seriously, he must oppose the founding principles, which are not conceivable absent the American Revolution. But he has to oppose the revolution with its friend-enemy distinction, its radicalism, its instability and incivility, its, let's be blunt, its violence. Plus, of course, it's, you know, we don't need to add, but we will, right? It's racism, sexism, classism, and there were no transgender bathrooms at Independence Hall. I would submit to you, if a conservative, a modern conservative, takes his stated principles seriously, it's ridiculous for him to profess admiration of George Washington. He has to admire a statue of a George Washington that doesn't exist, or his imagination of a George Washington, not the actual real George Washington, who did the things that the history books record, assuming you can still find them available in a library, unburnt. Now, in the speech I referenced earlier, Joe Biden said, quote, "There is no place for political violence in America, period, none, ever," unquote. Leave aside the fact that his team commits such violence almost daily with impunity, and his side works hard to excuse it and make sure there's plenty of bail money to get everybody out of jail, and lawyers to make sure that they get off with get the charges dismissed or suspended sentences. Leave that aside. As a historical and theoretical matter, that statement is complete garbage, right? Violence birthed America. It's just a fact. Now, it was justified violence. It was organized violence. It was careful violence. It was the furthest thing from indiscriminate, okay? But it was still a war waged against a government that considered itself legitimate. Now, all governments consider themselves legitimate. The worst tyrants never concede for an instant that they are anything but ordained by God. Or, if we're talking about an atheist tyrant, a Stalin or a Lenin, by some kind of natural order or history. That only means, though, that anyone looking to invoke the right of revolution, in practice, had better carefully think through the circumstances. Know that he is not just right theoretically, but that it is prudent to pursue in the here and now, i.e., that he can win and do better than the present regime. Another quote, this one you'll remember, and I won't need to tell you what document it's from, it should be obvious. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Conservatives, who should know better, reject all this, at least implicitly. They study the revolution as, at best, a historical curiosity. They claim not to be historicists, at least those who know what historicism is deny that designation for themselves. But I believe, and will argue and submit, that they are all, in fact, Hegelians, whether they admit it to themselves or not. I would submit further that they all owe Francis Fukuyama a huge apology. Everybody remember who he is? These days, he's a kind of, it's hard to say what he is. He's an ex-neocon, current liberal who wants the United States to get involved in the war and nuke Russia or something. I don't know, he's kind of gone crazy. But you could argue he was always crazy. Anyway, he became famous, very famous in 1989 for declaring the, quote, end of history. Big article. You should all be so lucky as to write an article that gets that much attention, even if it's dumb. The fame is probably intoxicating and it can get you a book contract, which it did in his case. But the conservatives laughed at that, I think rightly. Every time some new event happened, they would say, oh ho, how is that possible? We thought it was the end of history. Ha ha, Frank. Right? Conservatives have actually been giving that same joke for 30 years now. Well, these days, if you even suggest that the United States might be trending in a bad direction, here come the conservative enforcers. It's not merely that they think our constitutional system is or ought to be sacrosanct. On that, I completely agree with them. It's that they believe, against the founders and against all experience of history, that once implemented, it can never be lost. They defend every perversion, distortion, corruption, and topsy-turvy reinterpretation of that system as if it were the system itself. Do they not see the change? Do they see it but not favor it? Or do they see it but favor it? I'm sorry. In any case, they lie about it, in my opinion. They deny that the change has happened or is happening, the better to lull those who might otherwise worry into somnambulant silence. And then they praise that it's happening because it's all to the good. I guess that's how they stay in the good graces of the left. But if historicism is false, then the American system can be lost. Tyranny can recur. Remember George W. Bush's second inaugural. The purpose of the United States henceforth was dedicated to ending tyranny in our world. A preposterous, utopian, impossible thing to accomplish. Okay? A conservative should regard that, I think, as a utopian and impossible. But ours don't. It's funny. A consistent theme of the left over my lifetime has been, it can happen here. The it, of course, being the United States becoming a Nazi state. Left's been saying this forever. Whole movies are made about it. I never watched them, but I know they exist because you can't get away from the promotional materials. You know, The Man in the High Castle or Philip Roth's The Plot Against America. I mean, they do the same movie over and over again, The Dark Knight of Fascism descending on the United States. The USA in the leftist imagination is always 1 millimeter away from Hitler or some new Hitler. But conservatives have their own version of this. It can't happen here. Human possibilities that have bedeviled the world since there have been human beings not merely will never recur here, they can't recur here. We're somehow immune. Now, personally, you can guess what I think of that. I think it's ridiculous as a matter of theory and history and conservative and observable experience. So returning again to the beginning, what do the founding principles require of us today? I would say first they require an honest assessment of where we are, of the present regime. Let's do, for instance, an honest reading of the 18 charges against George III, with which the Declaration of Independence almost concludes. There's still two paragraphs after that, but, and compare them to our situation. Second, once we have a clear-eyed grasp of our situation, the founding principles require us to deliberate on what to do. And here's where the conservatives lose their cookies. I've seen this happen a number of times, including only just last week to a friend and colleague of mine. You bring up the right of revolution as even a theoretical matter, even state that it has to be metaphysically true, or just state that the founders believed it, and the conservative will scream, "Oh ho, what do you mean what to do? You calling for armed revolution right now?" And then they get on their cell phone, "Director Ray, I got one, he's here in the room right now. Come get the insurrectionist. I know you guys have had a hard time finding people who really want armed rebellion against the USA, right? I got a live one right now." By the way, that gets me some points, right? So rather than play along with the conservative desire to get me to, as the kids call it, Fed post, so that I can be served up to the security state, I'd rather turn it around. I have a question for the conservatives, actually several, which I know they won't answer, which means it's really for you, the audience, to ponder. Is the right of revolution ever justified? Was it justified only that one time in 1776, but never again? If so, why was it justified then, and what makes it unjustifiable ever again? Because of historicism? Was the American Revolution an irreversible leap into a future that can't go dark, that can't go bad, can't go backward? Or is it that you think things can't ever get bad enough in this country, or merely that they won't? I.e., is there some deep structural reason, or is it merely your expectation? If the latter, then you are implicitly admitting, in theory, that the right of revolution might at some point be justified, i.e., it has not been obviated by history. Now, we should all hope that this remains merely a theoretical discussion. And in terms of that discussion, I maintain that theoretical discussion, I make clear, I maintain it as axiomatic that you can't have natural rights without a right of revolution, just as you can't have the founding without an actual revolution. And you can't have since you can't have the American regime without natural rights, then you can't have natural rights or the American regime without a right of revolution. You take any one of these things away, the whole system crashes. It collapses in its own contradiction and incoherence. But on a practical level, my last question, because Richard is looking at me with the hook, what does the denial of this right, if we are to deny it, force us to do, to accept anything and everything? Where are the limits? You know, while evils are sufferable, implies that there will come a time when evils are no longer sufferable. Are all evils sufferable forever? Are we required to suffer them? Now, we know from Scripture that we're required to suffer certain evils that God ordains for us, but God doesn't say that you're ordained or required to endure certain human-inflicted evils for all time and do nothing, right? The implicit and sometimes explicit conservative answer appears to be, yes, we're required to suffer forever. Turn the other cheek, bend the knee, endure your beatings forever. For if there is no recourse to a higher principle or law, then there is no other choice. That is, to borrow from Machiavelli, the, quote, effectual truth, unquote, of conservative pusillanimity, another of his favorite words and mine, about the right of revolution, is perpetual self-subjugation to tyranny. Weasels, compromisers, mediocrities, and losers, indeed. Again, that's a quote. I like it, but it's a quote from someone else. But to be fair, the conservatives can muster strength when they see a real threat to their position. You can be sure that if you so much as glancingly wonder if the right of revolution exists, even in theory, their conservative will be armed and ready to shoot you in the back. Thank you.